This is CliffCentral.com. Thank you with all of my heart.
It's a brand new start. Right.
A dream come true.
Take it away, Miley. Isn't that nice? I like that song. Malibu, Miley Cyrus.
You know, it's a good song.
Uh-oh.
But the music video, it just gives me hay fever. She's running around in the grass and flowers, and maybe it's because we're going to spring, but every time I watch it, I'm just like, girl, grass is itchy. You should be sneezing after this. It's a whole allergic reaction.
I don't know. I took such pleasure in sending three of my friends on my way into work this morning who live in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
I sent them a message to say, happy spring day to me, happy autumn day to you, or fall as you call it, right?
Oh, there's nothing delightful about autumn, guys. Oh, sorry to our anyone listening from the Northern Hemisphere.
I had such a long day yesterday. I woke up early in the morning, and then we had this event with DJ Spoo in the evening, and in between I had meetings and a whole lot of other stuff. And on my way home, it was like 9:30 or whatever, and then there was a police roadblock that I had to get through, which obviously was, it took at least half an hour.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you know when you've had a long day and then that happens?
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, no, what is this for? Are they going to want to check fines? You know, because you never know what the roadblock's for. So they were checking for drunk drivers. And luckily, obviously, I'd had nothing to drink. And the very polite Metro Police officer came up to the side of the car and she said, have you been drinking? And I said, no. And she said, when last did you have a drink? And I said, oh, shit, Friday last week, and she laughed. She's like, you can go, because she could tell.
Yeah.
They're very good at that. They can tell.
Yes, they can.
Because I think they've heard every excuse in the book.
Oh,
They must know straight away if you, well, officer, no, of course I have had a cigar drink.
And they can see right through you.
Yeah.
They can, and it's almost as if they can smell like, oh, okay, where is your license actually?
Yeah.
Like, oh no, but this is the one day I forgot my license at home.
We must be also giving it away in our eyes, because have you noticed that when they stop you at night, they've shined that flashlight in your face?
Yeah.
I'm sure there are telltale signs that they know now that they can just.
You're that deer in the headlights look.
Oh no, this one.
This one's so drunk.
What I've always found, though, is, you know, I've never really I rarely ever get stopped. But when I do, because I keep all of my things in the boot, like, they don't even let me, like, step out. I don't know whether they think I'm intimidating. I'm like,
you,
dude, I need to get my license in the boot. They're like, okay, never mind.
I heard a great way.
Like, what?
We should all do this. Everyone should have, if you're a woman, a hijab in your car, even if you're not Muslim. And if you're a man, the whole outfit, the Saudi thing, the whole Saudi outfit. And if you, what you do is, if you see a roadblock coming, you quickly get changed into your Saudi or your burqa or your hijab or whatever, because Muslims don't drink, right?
Oh boy.
And if it's blocks
it's
your mouth,
blocking your mouth
and you speak, yes, they don't get this.
If you're a woman, you won't have to have the booze breath. Isn't that brilliant?
Oh.
I'm going to do it.
You're bound to touch someone on their studio with that remark.
Oh, come on. Bad. We should all pretend to be Muslims when we get to roadblock. That's one way the cops, because they're not going to be religiously offensive and say to you, oh, nonsense. Ma'am, I can tell you've been drinking. You're like, no, but I'm a devout Muslim.
I don't know how much of a convincing Muslim I'd make.
Oh, you could. Come on.
This little sliver of chocolate brown skin showing through.
Well, you're a guy, so you would wear the whole Saudi outfit. I don't even know what the headdress with the
burqa.
No, that's a woman's. Women wear burqas and hijabs and abayas.
Whatever that is, yeah. The male equivalent.
The male equivalent of it. Males don't cover their face.
But they do.
My buddy, you'd look quite sexy in one of those.
Okay.
And
just because your eyes are showing nothing
and
else.
You would never get arrested for drinking. Huh? Think about it. It's a good
I'm
plan.
I'm down for the scars.
I will. You know what I'll do? If you want to donate money to me, if you ever get arrested and you would have paid what is it? 2,000 Rand fine, I think it is. Yeah, if you get arrested for drinking and driving, I think they lock you up or they could put you. It could put you straight in. Yeah, I think they might put you straight into the police cells.
Oh, jeez.
What do they do, Amanda? You would know.
You know what I normally do is I just start crying and then I go.
Oh, right.
Wait, yeah. Crying works?
Yeah, but I'm really crying. It's not even fake crying. I'm scared. So then I cry and then they're like, you better go straight home.
Yeah, but don't you think this is a brilliant plan, this idea of like putting on Muslim garb?
It's great, but you know, some people can't even drive, you know, normally, and now you want people to get dressed while they're driving.
No. No, what you do is when you leave the club.
Oh,
oh no. When you leave the club, get into an
get into
Uber.
Your outfit.
No. That's
I'm so irresponsible.
Oh, and disappointed that none of us are taking up to your great idea.
Well, I thought it was a brilliant idea. Here's what I was going to say. If you get away with this, send me the money. I gave you the idea.
The 2,000 rand.
Yeah, send me.
You can just do the easy way and just like have a cigarette and a bubble gum, and then the breathalyzer can't pick that up.
Oh, come on. Does that work?
A cigarette especially, yeah.
Well, I'm not going to start smoking just so that I can.
Well, Gareth, it's either the weekend in jail or one cigarette.
Do you carry a hubbly in the car?
Yes.
What? Sometimes it's on, like it's, you've got a coal on it.
If someone's with me, because then they can hold it.
No, stop.
Amanda.
No, guys.
When I used to au pair, while I was waiting for the little girls at the school, I just used to have a hub.
Wow. Oh,
you're incredible.
It was great.
Do you, like, put it on the passenger seat?
Or yeah, on the floor. I just go carefully over the bumps.
All right, everybody. Listen, it's time for the Burning Platform, which is brought to you by Nando's. Now, I don't know if you know about this, but Nando's have just, in time for spring, launched a deliciously refreshing line of frosted drinks. How does that sound? Ooh. Which could keep you and should keep you cool under the collar as temperatures start to go up. Nando's new exclusive range of frosted drinks come in two delicious cheeky flavors. You get strawberry limeade and wicked lemonade. Perfectly complement the delicious flavor of their peri peri chicken. With a crushed, smooth, refreshing consistency, it could be described as the lip-smacking premium slush that is a delicious thirst quencher. At just R24.90, you have no reason to not make it the perfect partner to any Nando's flame-grilled peri-peri meal, whether you're dining in or you're taking it away. Isn't that exciting?
Yep.
New products at Nando's. Oof. So go and try out their new thirst quenchers. Tell me what you think of them, and you could go and get them from today. Special birthday release. You know Nando's are turning 30 years old, right? The first Nando's was opened in 1987 in Johannesburg by Robbie Brosen and Fernando Duarte. Nando, that's where Nando comes from. All Nando's peri-peri chickens marinated for 24 hours, locally sourced, never frozen, ensuring that you get the finest flavors. That's Nando's. Let's get to Justice Malala and see what's going on in the Burning Platform. Justice Malala is here. It is time for the Burning Platform, which is brought to you by Nando's. Every week we check in on the stories that make South Africa tick. And as usual, Justice, there's such a short supply of outrageous political nonsense.
Gareth, you wouldn't believe it, eh? I feel we need more. Jeepers. I can't keep up. I just can't keep up with what's happening. You know, when you think about Wednesday evening, you and I were in touch. I was sending you what we should talk about and so forth. And at 9:36 p.m., you have Bloomberg, the news agency, running this story that the Hawks have asked Trevor Manuel and Jabu Muleketi, who are former finance minister and deputy minister, to give them affidavits about that rogue unit that has given us so much stuff.
What is the Hawks' obsession with this rogue unit? What do we know they were intended to do, and what were they not meant to do that the Hawks are so concerned about?
You know, I'm not a lawyer or I don't work for the NPA, but I can tell you this case is going to fall apart even before it starts. It's going to be exactly what happened last year when Pravin Gordhan was charged with giving one of his employees early retirement. Something that the Hawks didn't realize happens to 3,000 state employees every year. It's absolutely within the books, and the thing collapsed, and Sean the Sheep, Sean Abrahams, had to have that press conference in which it took him 1 hour to say, I made a mistake. We shouldn't even have started this investigation, let alone charge the man. Anyway, what happened was that there was a meeting way back in the early 2000s held in Mafikeng. It was a meeting of ministers who had some intelligence capability, and ministers and civil servants like Pravin Gordhan, who was the head of the revenue service at the time. And it said, we should think about bringing together all these arms of intelligence so that we all work together. Well, then they took a resolution that, okay, let's all go and start some intelligence gathering capacity specific to our fields. So if there's intelligence needed around, let's say, if tobacco companies are colluding not to pay tax, then the guys at sales can do that. So this is how this thing was started.
It sounds legitimate.
I mean,
governments all over the world are obsessed with making sure that they get drain money. And they squeeze every penny out of it. So this is not unusual.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, so that's how it started. It seems as if the hawks suddenly woke up and said, no, we've got to do this. Now, South Africans have followed the almost persecution, I think, of Pravin Gordhan over the past few years. As firstly, his record in SARS, which used to take a lot of money from a lot of people, was pummeled. And then after that, attempts to do all sorts of to him when he was at the finance ministry. And I think that what we're seeing here is a new trend. For our listeners who follow trends and try to build something out of it, for me, there's a trend, and it happened on August 8. On August 8, Jacob Zuma wins narrowly the vote, defeats the vote of no confidence against him in parliament. It's 198 to 177. 198 ANC MPs voted for Zuma to stay. 177 opposition and ANC members voted for him to leave. Now, the opposition needed only 200 plus one, so 201 members to vote, and he'd have been out. Since then, there's been a witch hunt, if you will. The ANC is asking, there are between 26 and 40 ANC MPs who voted against Jacob Zuma. Mm. Who are they? How dare they? Remember that the ANC has 249 members of parliament, only 198. So there's 51 ANC MPs.
Who are suspicious.
Who everyone's looking, saying that Gareth is looking at me funny. So something is going on here. And so since then, there's been a witch hunt going on. So people like Makosi Khoza, Pravin Gordhan, Derek Anekom, Mondli Gungubele, who've said publicly, plus all the others who haven't said publicly. So let's say it's 26, the minimum number of ANC MPs who voted against Zuma. So there's 22 plus those four. And then it's, where are they? Who are they? No. Everyone.
And this must be keeping the president up at night.
He
likes to know. He's an intelligence man from years ago. This must be driving him crazy.
Absolutely. So then, those who have spoken, Makosi Khoza is being charged by the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal, plus action has been taken against her in parliament. They've demoted her. Derek Anekom has been asked to respond why he shouldn't be fired as the head of discipline. Mondli Gungubele is being attacked by some of his comrades publicly. Pravin Gordhan, let's take out file X and see what's going on.
All right, but this was such an embarrassment to Shaun the Sheep before. Any other NPA head would have resigned after such an embarrassment, but we can't find him, so he may as well have resigned. But now this has all been reinstated. So yeah. Clearly, and does it coincide? Because I do think it's suspicious that this has come at the same time that Edward and Duduzane Zuma are busy speaking out. Do you think the two are linked?
I think that's a very clear link. I think that both Duduzane and Edward Zuma, who, by the way, are not elected officials. They're just the sons of. But are suddenly very deep in ANC politics and saying all kinds of things. But anyway, I think that the link is that they were told that, no, we've got something on him now. Mm. And they are feeling emboldened. They are feeling that they can speak out and that they will have some legal leg to stand on. And the Hawks investigation, by the way, the Hawks are saying, no, this has got nothing to do with Pravin Gordhan, absolutely nothing. Now, you know, if I was, if I didn't live in South Africa the past year and a half when they said exactly the same things about Pravin last year, I wouldn't, I would say, oh, our institutions are being honest and upstanding. But I can tell you now, this has absolutely everything to do with Pravin Gordhan. It seems to me, given if you read Pravin Gordhan's, sorry, Duduzane Zuma's open letter to Pravin Gordhan, that what Pravin Gordhan set off while he was at Treasury, the attempts to stop the rampant looting that we now know is happening via the, you know, Gupta leak, Gupta leaked emails,
which they still claim is nonsense.
Yeah, they claim it's nonsense, but we all—they've been corroborated so many times by so many different people. It's not even worth that what they are saying is utter nonsense. But it is very clear that the family, that their allies, the Zumas, are feeling the heat. They're feeling the heat and they're trying to fight back. That fight back is going to be dirty, and it's going to dirty the ANC's politics, particularly over the next 4 months up to December 2014. You're going to see even more push, more dirty tricks. I think that
smears,
there will be many smears. If you think about it, the other day I was speaking to Thandi Modise, who was a very big Jacob Zuma acolyte when she stood with him and became Deputy General Secretary of the ANC in Polokwane. I mean, you know, and we were just laughing about, what's the latest intelligence report saying? And it was interesting that, you know, she would, before every conference, there's some intelligence report leaked and this and so forth. So we're going to see more and more of those things. We're going to see a lot more of the dirty tricks that we've seen.
So what do you think Thandi Modise is thinking at the moment? Where do you think she sits?
Oh, no, I think she's going to announce at some point that she also wants to be president with the vain hope that someone will pick her up as a more junior, but as a running partner. To your question, think about it. Who is in this race? Matthew Sposa? Lovely guy. Lovely guy. Does he have a chance?
Not a chance.
Jeff Radebe? Lovely guy. Lovely guy.
No, and proved through that ugly scandal that he was smeared with that he actually does have a backbone, despite everyone's belief to the contrary.
Indeed.
So, you know, could have been a nice guy, but not a chance.
So
Lindiwe Sisulu?
Talks a lot, talks a good game, but you know what?
Not a chance.
Not a chance.
Balega Mbete.
I mean, you know when Julius Malema stood up in Parliament and said, we know you slaughtered a cow. Jacob Zuma told you that you are his woman candidate. I think that was the final nail in the coffin. I don't think that it's going anywhere. She's been pushed forward by about three branches of the ANC in the Eastern Cape.
So also not a chance.
Not a chance.
That leaves us with Cyril Nkosazana.
Yeah.
She made all kinds of speeches this week, and it's been Women's Month, which has been a terrific opportunity for her to grandstand.
Very.
She's having difficulty, though.
She's having difficulty. There are two difficulties that she faces. First of all, you know, Gareth, if you are going to say, I'm going to be president, I would like you to tell me what you're going to do about 27% unemployment, 30.4 million people living below the poverty line. You know, there are
17 million on welfare.
Exactly. 17 million. More people are on welfare than are working in this country.
And we're relying on those working people to pay for those people.
Exactly.
You know, on welfare.
So I'd like you to have a platform. So when you stand up and all you ever talk about is white monopoly capital,
women in power. That was it.
Exactly. And we say, but how? Because you know what? We need a president. We need a woman president, but we need a president who will solve the problems of the country. So her big problem is that her plank is the Jacob Zuma plank. It's basically Jacob Zuma goes and says we need radical economic transformation. She goes and says at Gibbs, we need radical economic transformation. In fact, she turns around at Gibbs. She gave the speech, and in the speech, she mentions radical economic transformation 6 times. In her notes, in her standing up speech, she doesn't mention it. Why? Because here is a school that teaches you how to be WMC or BMC, Black Monopoly Capital. So she's speaking not truth to power, but to who's listening to me now. And it sounds very popular. Her second thing is that her campaign or her support base is falling apart. Colin Maine has grandstanded about her being the next president of the ANC. Well, he's fighting with the Supra Mahuma Pelo, the premier of the Northwest. How are they working together on this campaign? I noticed that Colin Maine has gone very quiet on the Armed for Nkosazana front. So that's a little something. In the Free State, Thabo Manyoni is standing up against Ace Magashule. It means that the Free State province could be split. In Mpumalanga, we've spoken about this before on the show.
Didi
Mabuza is saying, you think Nkosazana will win the election in 2019? I don't want to be part of the train that's going to be in the opposition benches. So suddenly he's casting around for someone. You saw him last week meeting with the ANC in Gauteng. Plus, KwaZulu-Natal has its own problems with divisions. So that campaign is not looking as hot as it used to be. Yeah, it's decidedly on the back foot.
So maybe Cyril was clever to just bide his time. We all thought he was just sitting on his hands. He was, you know,
maybe he was
tongue-tied, compromised. Maybe he is all those things, and he still will win because he's just prepared to wait.
I think. Look, I mean, he does wait. The key thing is to know when to strike, and he. You know, it was interesting on Sunday. He was in Polokwane, and it was very clear the ANC Women's League in Polokwane came out very clearly that that's our guy. And not anyone else. Kosatu there was very clear. Mm-hmm. And it was a campaign rally It was a campaign rally inside the ANC. But he made the point, and Lindiwe Sisulu has made the point. It is clear now that the Jacob Zuma faction doesn't have the numbers that it thought it had. But the key will be, will they try corruption to steal the election from Ramaphosa? That now, he's mentioned it about people being paid money, people being paid to vote in certain ways to block delegates from arriving, getting into the conference and so forth. And I think that is the next big battle and the next big challenge for the ANC. So the actual integrity of that election is going to be a very interesting one.
Now, we should really divide the Burning Platform into 3 parts. Actual news, succession debate news, and parastatal
we
news.
We should, actually.
Because parastatal news, there's always some new disaster. And we were talking about SAA quite broadly last week, but there are more details surfacing every week about what a disaster that is. Yeah. Now I see it's not just SAA, it's SAA Express as well.
Yes.
They also have no money.
Yeah.
They also... I saw the guy, I can't remember his name, one of the DA guys, say to the CEO of SA Express, you should resign. You're not very good at this. And the guy just sat there and looked at him.
No.
Like he didn't even have an answer because he's right.
Yeah, he's right. But can I tell you, you know, I think your instincts are slightly better than mine on this. I sometimes think, oh, it will take time for disaster to happen. That, you know, you can take time. And I'm starting to question that a bit because, you know, you've just mentioned the SA Express now, and I hadn't thought about it properly. But now there was a lady at SA Express. Her name was Sizam Zimela.
Mm.
Sizam Zimela was interesting because she ran that thing and it made a profit.
That's right.
So in the
she was also the acting CEO of SAA for a while.
For about 2 months. Yeah. Then our friend Dudu thought
back in.
Why are you working? This is not good. We don't encourage that.
We
sort
don't
of
encourage
thing.
Profit and success here. No, we encourage failure. Well, mediocrity or less.
Exactly. What are you doing? Stop that now.
All right.
So Sizam Zimela started, wrote that thing, ran that thing, SA Express, and it made a profit. So in among Mango, SA Express, and SAA, these guys made money. She was so good, that's why they asked her to go run SAA. And then after 2 months, they realized that she believes in corporate governance, in controls, in
honesty.
Systems, honesty. Don't do that now.
That doesn't go well.
And she left and she went on to try. She tried to start her own airline. I don't think it worked out. And I hope she goes back and starts another one because I think she's amazing. But it happened so quickly between Sizam Zimela leaving SA Express and what you see now. From being a well-run, successful business to this, and it's an incredible thing. But the point I wanted to make about all these state-owned entities, Gareth, is that we have a problem here. At Eskom, you have a situation where the executives there lied in public to the Business Day, to other media, that no. These payments to Trillion and McKinsey were all above board. We all agreed on them, and there was no dissent. And da da da. The company that was in charge of the payments had actually said, "No, we mustn't pay this. That we need an investigation into this." So then they, when they heard about this, that you know their name is being dragged through the mud, they went to Eskom and said, "We are going to take you to court for lying about us." And Eskom was forced to admit in a press statement that, yes, we did pay 500 million. 500 million. You and I are sitting here making little, you know, something small
That's
with
a
spaza shop. 500 million. Now, I want to tell you, how many guys could have applied to start new businesses with that money? You could have invigorated this.
You could have built almost 4 Nkandlas.
Exactly. There you go. And if you'd used proper pricing, you'd have built 10. So, you know. So what's going to happen? My issue in this country is that we are in a no-consequence zone where the person who has to take action is Lynn Brown.
Right.
Lynn Brown's PA was in Dubai at the same time as Tom Moyane from SARS, at the same time as Des van Rooyen, Weekend Special, at the same time as Ace Mahashule's two sons, at the same time as Duduzane Zuma, at the same time as the three Gupta brothers in December 2015. She tells us that she was sick and had to go and sit there. I'm sorry. Minister Lynn Brown is as implicated as so many other people in this whole thing, the state capture thing, and nothing is happening to them. So now she becomes an activist. She's running around. I want Eskom to answer within 48 hours and tell me why they lied about the Eskom the trillion payment. Well, she should have acted a long time ago.
Right.
She hasn't. She's been Minister of Public Enterprises for more than 3 years. Has she done anything? No. So there's a fundamental problem here, and it's consequent. No one goes to jail. No one gets arrested. No one is even charged. You have a situation now where Outer, an NGO, started to fight for, the e-tolls. Mm-hmm. It's now laying charges, doing criminal investigation. It's laid charges against Museveni, Zwane and others because the state is failing in its job.
But Justice, I mean, you got very angry with me the other day when I said that there are so many incompetent women and this does women in government, it does women in powerful positions, it does South African women generally a huge amount of ill.
Yeah.
But here's Lynn Brown, yet another example of incompetence at that level. And it is Women's Month. And then I hear the Minister of Women, because we're the only country in the world, I think, that has an actual ministry just dedicated to women and children and people with disabilities.
Yeah.
They throw them all together because, of course, they have everything in common. But Susan Shabangu, who, of course, doesn't have a great track record herself, having been, what was she before?
Minerals.
That's right. That was during Marikana, which, of course, we know is an ugly mark on the history of this country. But putting all of that aside, Susan says, and language does matter, Justice. The words we use matter.
Absolutely.
She says, gender-based violence is not a crisis. It's just a challenge. A challenge is, you wake up in the morning, you can't decide whether you're going to have all bran flakes or Rice Krispies. It's challenging.
Yeah.
A crisis is you have neither all bran flakes nor Rice Krispies and you can't eat, and that's been the case for 18 days.
You know, there are two issues there, Gareth, but there are two issues, and I think they're important. So the first one is, you know, when you raised the point the other week, and you're right, the problem here is that Jacob Zuma has gone out of his way to put people in that cabinet who are absolutely incompetent, will do what he says, and will not think for themselves. So one of the biggest problematic areas about Jacob Zuma and his cabinet, his massive cabinet of 34 people plus another 34, 35 deputies, is that it's like me saying, you know what, I'm going to have a braai at my house on Sunday, invite my friends. Now, my friends might be incompetent, but they are my friends. So they just come, they pitch, oh, we sure. Justice is friend. So that's what he's done. So Susan Shabangu, Batabile Dlamini. I mean, that person wouldn't be scooping dog poop at the park. She wouldn't be able to do it. But yeah, there you go. Anyway, so mediocrity is the signature of the Jacob Zuma administration and cabinet, and it's.
I wouldn't even see mediocrity, because mediocrity is like Lindiwe Sisulu does a reasonably okay job. By Angie's standards, she passes.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that everyone in the country has suddenly got houses.
Exactly.
And how do you perform in a stupid ministry like sport? How do you perform? What are you required to do? How would we measure a good sports minister versus a bad one? Because it's an unnecessary and ridiculous ministry.
Exactly. It's things you should do, but you don't have to dedicate the whole ministry.
No.
But I just think you need to be careful about Jacob Zuma, because he'll give a lot of great women a bad name, because by dint of association, he's already started stripping them of their dignity.
But this thing about the situation women face not being a crisis, this is a very poor move.
It's words matter, and it says it doesn't matter to me when you use words like that. So for me, I think this is the last day of Women's Month. But I think if there's anything we've learned in this country, is that my word, you know, when you think that you have allies, you think that the ANC Women's League will stand up and say, Mduduzi Manana, the deputy minister who beat up a woman, should go. But then they say, no, he's going nowhere. And they actually stand up and say to Jacob Zuma, don't get rid of him. Credit to him. I think he forced him out. But my word, that is just,
well, sad. Irony of ironies. Grace Mugabe goes back to Zimbabwe. Her first public statement after arriving back in Zimbabwe is a thing about how women shouldn't be abused.
I know.
She doesn't have an appreciation for irony.
No, there's just words. It's a speech. You know, people think I'm giving a speech.
Mm-hmm.
And so it means standing up and talking rubbish. The words matter. What do you stand up and say? People haven't come to see you stand up.
You make a living out of words.
And these people are abusing words every day. It's shocking. It's incredible. But it's happening. Anyway, on that note, the point about Women's Month is that we've seen some horrific things. But let's not forget that those are just the tip of the iceberg. And so words like, this is not a crisis. When out of 4,000 women who are raped, only probably 400 get to conviction. It makes you want to weep. Anyway.
Yeah, it's a sad note to end Women's Month on, but thank you very much, Justice. We will check in with you next week, The Burning Platform.
Absolutely, and there'll be lots to talk about. Jacob Zuma on the 5th, I think that this...
Tuesday.
On the 5th, the EFF's case for him to be impeached goes to, I think, the Concord, one of the courts. I'm not sure if it's the Concord. And I think we need to talk about this economy at some point because, you know, businesses are shutting down. People are out on the streets. And Jacob Zuma is busy with his sons shouting at Pravin Gordhan and not doing anything about
the economy. I've spoken to three people who run their own businesses in the last 2 weeks, and all three of them said this is the first time in 10 years that they have not paid tax. And that's because they're making a loss, not a profit.
Yes.
Three separate businesses in three separate sectors.
Now, if only President Zuma and his cabinet were making the link, 17 million people on social welfare, and you're not getting businesses,
give us a chance to give you something to steal.
Exactly. There will be two... Anyway.
All right. Thank you, Justice.
Absolute pleasure.
I'm sorry, I did it wrong. Yas.
Yas.
That's going to be what we'll say every morning for spring. All right, thank you to Justice Malala and The Burning Platform. He will return next week for more. It's brought to you by Nando's. There's lots of other good stuff to discuss, but first, it's time to meet someone. She actually emailed us, told us she's got an interesting story to tell, and she does. She's an Italian living in South Africa. Now, that doesn't sound like a huge thing because there are a lot of Italians in South Africa. Sia, do you know any?
There is a restaurant in my area, which is and it's authentically run by true Italians. Well, so I mangia there.
There are a lot of Italians in South Africa, huge Italian community. There's the Italian club here in Joburg. I've got loads of friends who are Italian South Africans. And they are a very important part of the fabric of this country because many of them are responsible for having built much of the civil engineering infrastructure of South Africa. Yeah.
Great. Oh, hey now.
Yeah, did you know that?
No.
So it's not just Italian restaurants and football fans.
Great olive skin.
Yeah, and the good-looking people. Yeah.
Yes.
But they are a very, very important part of the fabric of this country. And they're also very proud of their Italian heritage. So you can be both.
Huh.
Yeah? So there's a book that has just been written, it was written some time ago. The Italian version is Da un capo all'altro.
Oh.
Right? And the South African version is Afritalian.
Did you really get that right?
Did I? Did I do okay?
It was fantastic. Your pronunciation is very good.
Thank you. Federica Marchesini.
Marchesini. Yes,
sorry.
Very good.
Marchesini. Federica Marchesini. I'll get that right every time from now on. It's nice to have you here.
Nice to meet you guys.
Yeah. So what made you want to write this book?
I don't know. I love writing. So I used to write when I was a young person, you know, when I was a child. I used to write diaries, love letters, explanation.
You love
letters
language.
To ex-boyfriends, anything.
But,
you know,
but
I
you
just
do love
writing.
You love language.
I love languages.
Well.
And like, I teach languages.
Correct.
So that's my job.
So we're going to teach CS some Italian this morning just so that he can be. Be smart enough to handle this from here.
Yes.
On in. So it's very nice to meet you. Federica, you live in the Cape?
Yes, I live in Cape Town.
All right. And how long have you been living in Cape Town?
I've been there for 16 years.
And you originally from Italy?
Yes, I'm from Verona.
Verona.
Yes. Oh, do you know the city of Romeo and Juliet?
That's right. It's the place where romance began.
Absolutely.
Oh, I live in hope that I shall find romance in
Oh, come on, Sia. You can find romance in... Ekuruleni, if
oh,
you try.
How romantic. Ooh, hubba, hubba.
But what I was saying earlier about the Italian community in South Africa, a very close-knit community. A lot of the Italian families know each other. There are plenty of them that have contributed in huge ways to the way South Africa is at the moment. And it must be a source of some pride that this is a community that is proud of itself.
Yes, I mean, I'm very happy, first of all, that you know about all these things, because most South Africans don't really know. You know, they connect Italy to food and restaurants, but there is a history behind. Eh? Oh. That's why we have a lot of South African Italian who live here.
And you can be both, is what I was saying when you were walking
in.
You can be good at both as well. The Italians that I know are very proudly South African, and they're also very proudly Italian, and they make... a big noise about both sides of their heritage.
So true. I feel the same, actually.
Oh, really?
Yes, because I've been here for so long. So when people talk badly about Italians, I need to protect them and defend them. And when Italians talk badly about South Africans, I have to protect the South Africans. So I really feel myself an Afro-Italian. So you can be both.
Now, the interesting thing about the Italians that I know in South Africa is that all of them are... They're doing really impressive things. Maybe I'm just mixing with the right ones, but there are Italians who run big multinational corporations. There are Italians who are involved very much in society, even politics.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
There was a gentleman who actually died last year, do you remember?
That's right. Ambrosini,
yes,
wasn't he?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he was actually instrumental in trying to get marijuana legalized.
Yes, I remember
right
perfectly,
at the end of his life. He died of cancer, and it was mostly for his own palliative care that he was so interested in the stuff. But, you know, there are people making a huge difference. And I suppose also culturally, who doesn't love Italians? You know, there's music, there's art, there's culture, there's
food,
craft, there's sophistication. There's so many products that we use every day that are Italian that we don't even think about.
Hmm.
And food, as Sia said, because he's obsessed.
Yeah.
Look, he doesn't eat a lot of... Let me explain to you.
I mean, I can see that.
Yeah.
Oh, no!
So he doesn't eat a lot. He doesn't eat meat at all. So, I mean, there's very few things that he can...
Pasta is my go-to all the time.
Very good.
Actually, pasta and wine. I'm Italian, guys.
You are.
I am Italian.
You're a Blatalian.
Blatalian. I actually like that. It sounds very royal somewhere. So Blatalian, I'll go with it.
What kind of stories, what kind of info do you put into the book?
Okay, so I wanted to create a story where I could talk about South Africa and Italy, like culturally, linguistically, and geographically. So I created a character. Her name is Athena Monti. So obviously there is a lot of me in this character, but I had to made up someone that does different things, you know, all the things that I would have wanted to do or, you know, different things.
Or that
things.
You have done.
Or I've done and, you know, nobody's going to know. Because that's the first question that they always ask me. Is he based on your life? You know, how much there is of you in a book? You know, I'm not going to answer because it's up to people to guess. And it's not so important to see if it's really a lot of me or just the 10%. But it's very humorous. I like to, you know, it's the idea of finding a compromise between two cultures. So to tease at Italians, to tease at South Africans, but without offending anybody, which is
fine. Well, that's impossible. So you've got to accept some people bound to be upset somewhere.
No, I was very discreet.
Oh.
Because every time I tease, you know, one side, I tease the other side.
Yeah, but still, the people find a reason these days to be upset by just about everything.
Oh, of course, if they want, they can, but I don't actually care.
So tell me about the Italian language, because you don't hear much of it spoken in South Africa unless you're around Italians.
Hmm.
It's not one of the languages that are offered at schools mostly.
Yes, it's true, yeah.
And I think that's kind of sad, because there are schools that offer French, there are schools that offer Mandarin. There aren't a lot of places that you could learn Italian.
Hmm. You know? I mean, there are private schools like mine in Cape Town. There is a Dante Alighieri. Mm-hmm. So there are not really many schools. Maybe just private people teaching.
So what do you want to learn, Sia? Let's get you some basic phrases.
Okay. Well, I always have heard that when you just know I love you in a language, you're down.
Mm.
That will like hold you in good stead. So I know j'atem in French.
J'atem,
how do you say I love you in Italian?
Ti amo.
Oh,
so easy.
Yes. It's very strong in the meaning that you wouldn't use it with a lot of people. Like in English, we say, I love you to your dog or to your friend. You know, I love you is very easy in English.
But in Italian.
In Italian, ti amo, it's very personal and it's connected to lovers, not just friends.
Ooh.
It's a romantic.
What's a more passionate thing to say? Like, take your shirt off, I'm joking.
More passionate.
No, that one is quite, you know, ti amo is very strong.
It's very strong, Sia. That's like the extra hot sauce.
Oh, yeah. I'll be throwing that around.
No, the thing is, when you say ti amo to a woman or to a man, you know, you must be careful. You may just run off.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Things might happen.
Because, you know, people are scared of feelings. And
yes. Okay. They're going to catch feels.
I'm down with that. So that's
all
the
right,
first
so you've
thing
learned ti amo.
Ti amo.
He unfortunately uses ciao and bella in the wrong places. So teach him how to use it.
No, it's fine. You can, bella is fine. Bella means like darling, good. Beautiful.
Darling.
So you can bella. Say bella to a woman. You say bello to a man.
Bellissimo? What's that?
Bellissimo is very beautiful.
Bellissimo. Bellissimo.
Yes.
Is my accent right?
Bellissimo.
Bellissimo.
Yes.
Te amo. No?
You see, but
no,
I need to tell you. I need to tell you something, guys, though.
Yeah.
Italians, we are so used to see foreigners speaking Italian that way that we don't really like it that much.
No, it irritates.
Because it's almost like, you know, me being Italian, coming here and say, I don't know, like teasing South Africa the way you guys speak.
Yeah, it's almost mocking.
Yes.
Right?
So when you now see someone who instantly lifts their hands up and like presses
you get
their
annoyed.
Fingers together,
of course
is that like?
We do, because you know, it's like, it's normal to move your hands. It's
well, you know how you know how you shut an Italian up? You just tie their hands up behind their back.
I tried with my mother one day. I said, can you please try to have a conversation without moving your hands? She was so upset. She said, I was born with hands. Why? I don't like this game.
Now, tell me, you've had the book written in Italian and in English, and now you're going to do an Afrikaans version as well.
Yes, I mean, not me personally. You know, I wrote it in Italian myself.
Sure.
I translate it in English myself with the help of a sub-editor. And I have an Afrikaans guy who lives in Italy, and Marnitz. And Marnitz, as we speak, is translating my book
Fantastic.
In Afrikaans.
Oh, wow.
Well, what's nice about this is it's a novel. So it's mostly fictional. It's about this woman who you say is almost like a Bridget Jones of South Africa, but a lot more insightful, a little bit smarter, because Bridget Jones is a moron.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. And her adventures here in South Africa.
Yes. But also differences. She's traveling to Italy on holiday. She's going to Rome. And as she travels, she meets people. So she describes a lot of characters. It's about...
You married?
No, I'm not.
Oh, kids, no?
No.
Okay.
Mm.
You're still
living
time.
La dolce vita.
Stop it. Stop it. Don't you realize how annoying that is? But
la dolce vita.
I'll just drop
you know,
all
that pronunciation.
The five
dolce
words
vita.
I know anywhere.
It's very annoying when Sia gets into any of this because he starts thinking he is that person.
Yeah,
that's fine.
I need to unbutton my shirt now and show off skin. I feel like that's what the Italians
I'll
do.
Listen, for Italians, South African accent is very strong. Huh? Italians, they really struggle with your accent.
Oh.
Yes, because
they struggle
it's not
to understand or to speak that way.
Because I teach English to Italians as well, and when I explain words to them, they say I have no idea what people say.
Yeah.
It's a very strong accent for Italians.
How many people do you speak just Italian to? Family?
No, really, I don't really speak to my family. I just speak to Italian friends here. I mean, in Cape Town. Yeah, you know, I'm not a typical Italian person who is attached to the family and has to call mum and dad every day.
Okay.
No.
But Cape Town is a very cosmopolitan place, so there are a lot of different people from all over Europe that come to Cape Town all the time. So it's not as if everybody there is just running around speaking English or Xhosa or Afrikaans, right?
Yes. In fact, yesterday I was at the hairdresser and she's French. So wow. I had a 2 hours conversation in French. It was fantastic.
How many languages do you speak?
I speak 5 languages. So which Italian, English, French, German and Spanish.
What? Okay, you could pretty much be the best tour guide in all of Europe.
Really. But yeah, the more you know, if you don't practice them regularly, you don't really know them that well. You just have to spend time practicing languages.
What does colcacchio mean?
Oh, why do you ask me that? First of all, well done on the pronunciation, eh? Because most South Africans say colcacchio. Yeah. And then I put it in a book as well.
So what does colcacchio mean?
I can't say.
Of course you can. Can
I? Yes. Okay, that's fine. So literally means with the dick.
With the dick.
Yeah, cacchio is another way of saying dick. I know, sorry guys.
So it's like you are walking with the dick, you are...
No, it's an expression to mean like, come on, like I'm going to do it, col cacchio.
I'm going to do it, col cacchio.
That's so great. I love it.
Yes.
Every time at 6:30.
No, but the best is when you know, with these lovely posh ladies. Oh, where are you going tonight for dinner? I'm going to colcacchio. And then I would like to say to them, do you actually know what it means? Yeah. They would be shocked.
All right. Well, listen, good luck with the book. When did it actually come out? When did you publish it?
It was in April this year.
Okay. So it's new and it's available in good bookstores?
I have a few shops in Cape Town. In Joburg, I don't have a distribution yet in Joburg.
But we can buy online?
Yes. Right. You know, you can actually send an email to postmeyourbook@gmail.com.
Postmeyourbook@gmail.com.
I invented, wow. I created this email. I like that. And I can't believe nobody else had it.
Postmeyourbook@gmail.com.
And I posted to everybody in South Africa.
Oh, there you go.
But we are launching on this weekend, and that's why I'm here. Good. I'm here for the book launch. So we're having 4 different events around Joburg.
Can anyone come to them?
Yes, everybody. Actually, I would love you guys or whoever, you know, listen to the show.
You have a website, social media, somewhere we can follow you and figure out the stuff?
Yes, there's the Agog, you know, in Maboneng, the Agog Art Gallery.
Yes,
we're going tonight.
Yes.
And then we're going to the Stele, as you would say.
Oh.
Yeah, Stele restaurant in Rivonia.
Okay.
Stele, in Italian.
Yes, got you.
Then we're going to the Dante Alighieri, the Italian
school. How you mock Sia.
That's Can
you say Dante Alighieri?
Can you say Dante Alighieri?
Dante Alighieri.
Okay,
do you know
good.
Who that was?
No, I have no idea. I butchered it, but the
he
key
wrote,
is...
he wrote.
Well, it was a dude that's in a boardroom. We sort of invented the language.
Nonsense. Dante Alighieri is the guy who wrote the Inferno.
Yes.
I will also.
The story of man's
language.
The story of man's descent into hell.
I will do my research.
It gives a guide to hell, the 9 circles of hell. You should go and read it.
I don't even know how I'm going to start Googling his name. So I'm going to Google the Inferno.
And then we're going to the Italian club. You said that you've been there.
Yes, very good.
The Italian club. We're going there on Sunday.
Excellent.
So we're launching it there.
All right.
Exciting, huh?
Well, have some fun with all the Italians and the non-Italians who will come to your book launches. I hope that the book goes really, really well. And it's a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, it was lovely to be here. Grazie mille.
Ah, launch the book.
No, don't do that, Sia. Federica Marchesini, thank you so much for coming to see us and good luck with Afritalian.
Grazie.
All right.
Okay.
Very nice, Sia. Since you're being the cheesiest guy in the world, Sia, so this is just for you, all right?
Ah, grazie, mio amore.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
This is CliffCentral.com.